Radio Network for Racers Reunion Radio. I'm Bill Pratt. It's great to be with you tonight. And tonight we hope to feature Fuel Funny Car Racer, a real veteran, Ray Brickhouse, the original driver of the U.S. Mail. However, we haven't been able to reach Ray yet, so we're going to rearrange our show a little bit and try to get Ray on a little later. If we don't, then we're going to go into an open mic format, and we're going to ask you guys to text in questions and comments about the drag racing scene today. John and I have a bunch of topics we're going to discuss already if that happens. And if not, we're looking forward to your stuff on the chat. You can go up to racersreunion.com to join the live chat and hammer us with a couple questions. So we're going to rearrange it as I noted. And so let's get things started with Mr. Johnny Balkman with this week's JB's Take and the Racer of the Week. Take it away, John.
Thanks, BP. My pick for Racer of the Week is Tony Van Helmond from Masterton, New Zealand. I found Tony on the NZDRA website. His front-engine dragster in 59 Ford Fairlane street car caught my eye, and in my opinion, he represents the spirit of drag racing in our worldwide community. Tony has been involved in hot rodding and drag racing in New Zealand for as long as he can remember. He started drag racing a T-bucket with a supercharged small block Chevy years ago, but moved on from that as the family got bigger. A good friend of Tony's built a front engine dragster a few years back, on which he was his crew chief. Well, this got Tony hooked on nostalgia type racing, and he always wanted to have his own. About 10 or 12 years ago, Tony became an NZDRA tech inspector. He also became the NZDRA area steward at his local track, which was then an airfield. He was invited to join the Masterton Motorplex Drag Racing Club, which organized drag racing in Masterton. This club was behind building their own racing facility, which is now into its fifth season, and it's only the second purpose-built drag racing track in New Zealand at the present. Tony decided to build his own FED about 8 years ago, and with the help of family and some close friends, he built a 150-inch mild steel chassis car. It was fitted with a stock 305 small block and a power glide to a narrowed 9-inch with 28-inch spline axles and open drive. He used a lot of donated and home-built parts, including rear slicks that were thrown away by another racer just to get the car going. He finished the car, and due to his official duties, he put his son Andrew in the driver's seat. At their first meeting, they managed a 12-second ET, but soon that went down to the high 10s by the end of the season. The car proved to be reasonably consistent and reliable, which resulted in winning the modified DYO class at the 47th New Zealand Nationals and also claiming the NZDRA Modified Championship that first season. In the second season, Tony fitted a Hillborn stack-injected 383 small block running dart heads, 13-5 compression, steel rods, and a roller cam, but went through the season learning how to tune and achieving a best of 9 flat. The last season, they ran the car upgrading to a 4.3 ratio Moser differential, a beefed glide with a trans brake, and a new roller cam resulted in a best of 870 at 156 miles an hour. The team also managed a class win at the 49th New Zealand Nationals. They were handicapped by still running those old throwaway slicks, which they are replacing this season. And with some better tune-up info, they're aiming to get more consistent and aiming for the low eights. Tony runs on a shoestring budget, which makes for a lot of fun, and he's real happy to have the whole family involved, with his wife Philippa and daughter-in-law Jenny doing backup and tow car duties, as well as the help of lots of close friends. Tony's grandson Tyler has also recently caught the bug, and at 7 years old, he now races his own junior dragster. The 59 Ford he imported from Colorado approximately 9 years ago and is an original old Survivor, which has never been restored and has only 125,000 miles on it. It still runs the old 292 Y-block and 2-speed. It's used as the tow car for the FED at Nostalgia Meets. And Tony told me, he said, "I have been fortunate to have had the support of my family, allowing me to participate in the sport of drag racing, and one day might get back in the driver's seat. In the meantime, I will just keep doing what I do now to grow the sport here in New Zealand. One of my proudest moments was winning the NZDRA Award of Merit for Outstanding Contribution to the Sport of Drag Racing in 2015 and sharing our racing success on the track with my son Andrew, who does an awesome job driving the car. Great job, Tony. We wish you good luck, safe racing, and the best of times in the future. Back to you, BP.
Thanks, JB. And check in with Jeff. Are we still rolling on with our open mic format?
Carry on, sir.
Here we go. So let's do a couple of the things that we always do so that we're not rushing through them at the end now that we have a little bit of extra time. And then we can go to open mic and just roll it out. So let's talk about our lost friends, for one thing. We got quite a list this week, as we always do. Thanks to Barb for digging these up for us on the internet. A sad duty for her and for us, but proud, as always, to do it. Bud Dahm was announced for Pittsburgh International Raceway. He passed away on 10/24. Farewell to Bud. On the 25th, Gas Ronda, one of the absolute original superstars in funny car racing, and you know, from California, passed away from cancer on the 25th. Gas Ronda, one of the last guys to go to injectors, and was beating a whole lot of guys with an injected motor when they were already running superchargers. But very, very tough. Of course, we've had him on the program, and so proud to have brought his history to you. And you can look up our show with Gas Ronda on the archives. On the 26th, Joe Oldham was a columnist for Hemmings Motor News, one of the prestigious mags in the sport. Joe, farewell to you, sir. On the 27th, Michael Barsky, a great racer with a lot of fellow racers liked and a lot of fans liked as well. Michael passed away on the 27th. On the 28th, Larry Brown passed away. Larry was the partner of the famous gasser racer Bones Balog. A farewell to Larry. And on the 28th, also Richard Cook of the NHRA Safety Safari. And this is really sad. We lost a Safety Safari member last week, as I recall. So farewell to Richard, and thanks for all those years of service keeping racers safe. And on the 30th, finally, Rudy Melnar, who raced the Little General Chevy from Pittsburgh International Raceway, Rudy Melnar passing away as well. So really, really, our sad duty. Condolences to all the families, all the friends of these great racers. And, you know, we'll... Man, if there's a drag race happening up in the sky, man, it's well attended and it's well fielded. We got some good stuff going on there in heaven. So let's open it up here, John. We tossed a couple of topics out there. I put the challenge out to the guys on the chat line at Racers Reunion. So let's start out with some good things. Let's congratulate Troy Coughlin, who won his Pro Mod NHRA Championship yesterday over Mike Castellana at Las Vegas. And this is the way you do it. It was down to those two guys, winner take all. I don't remember which round it was. It wasn't the first. It might have been the second round or the third, but it was those two against one another, and they went after it hammer and tong, and I think it was something like a 580 to a 581.
Wow.
And Troy took it, winner take all. So
I love it when it comes down to something like that, you know. I mean, it's I'm not a big fan of the countdown, and I don't know if the pro mods are involved in that, but it actually, you know, adds to the excitement of the whole event and the championship chase that those guys are in. I also think that Troy Coughlin was a natural pro mod driver and team owner. I liked him in pro stock, but I really think pro stock is more of Jeg's deal, and Troy has just done an outstanding job as a pro mod racer, and so has TJ, his son. Mm-hmm. Also, they're both great pro mod racers.
Yeah, absolutely. The whole family's great, and of course we've had almost the whole family on the show. I don't know about TJ, but certainly Troy, and I think it was within the last year or so. Mm-hmm. Or it may have been after he ran that amazing outlaw pass at the end of last year. He did some crazy number. I can't recall what it was. But making it happen. And Castellana, I don't think we've had Castellana on, to tell you the truth. I've met him, you know, when they used to race at Bud's Creek, and of course, the man, Frank Menzo, is his crew chief, which is really, you know, that's the best of the best. But that's what happens. You gotta beat the man to be the man, and that's what Troy Coughlin did yesterday.
Does Mike Castellana have a blown engine now, or is it still a turbo?
I actually do not know. Where's our Pro Mod fans out there, guys? I tell you, I need Danny right next to me. He keeps up with those guys way better than me. I can tell you anything you want about 1972 funny cars, but
You know, he was the first turbo Pro Mod I ever saw run, and he was racing here in Houston in an NHRA Pro Mod event, and my goodness, that thing was powerful. It you know, it wasn't as loud as a blown car or a nitrous car, but man, that thing he smoked the tires like I hadn't seen in years on his burnout, and then he made, you know, a fantastic run. And I thought, when I saw him run, I said, this is going to be the future of this class. I really believe that the turbos are going to be the way to go. For most of the cars, if not all of them, most of the cars in the Pro Mod field were Camaros, except, you know, Chip King has that Dodge Charger, and you know, they ran the Willys cars for a while and everything, but I think that they're kind of going the way of the Buffalo now, man. The Camaro is the fast, slick, coolest car out there, man.
Well, you're right. I was actually at Bud's Creek a couple of years ago where we had a race, and this is, I mean, very recently, the last 2-3 years. And some of the guys who ran in Pro Mod at the very, one of the guys had like an old, I think it was a Kenny Tripp was the guy's name, had a beautiful Willys that they raced back in the late 90s, early O's maybe. And it was lined up against one of the modern, you know, Pro Mod Camaros. And I mean, the difference was night and day. It was just, you know, probably lost quite a lot as well. But yeah, here's Barb jumping in and say, hey, Shane Westerfield also won the championship in Top Alcohol Funny Car. Congrats to Shane. And she got him for an interview on December 4th. So there's all a right. scoop for us. Shane's coming up.
Yeah.
So great stuff. So let's stay with the race here. We got one more thing, of course, everybody's talking about it. Here's the thing. John Force with a really, was it a red light or a really, really late light?
I think it
Robert
was late.
Light. Yeah, it was a 190. See, I'm so old, I'm still thinking about the 400 tree. And the 190 I thought was a blatant red light, but of course they start at zero now. So yeah, it was a late light, and Robert got the win. And so... Mm-hmm. You know, so that's the thing. I mean, if you got all these guys with a bunch of cars, do you race them all, or do you? Or assuming that it happened, of course, John says it didn't. You know, Ron Capps, our buddies, was on there saying, "Come on, we're not idiots." Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you know, you got all the championships on the line, and in a year and a half, 3 years, 10 years, will they remember that one run because he got the luck of the draw to race against his guy, or they would remember? Would they remember? Assuming Height goes on to win. Mm-hmm. That Height just was the champion this year. You know,
I think they all do it, and you know, I mean, all of the big teams. If you have a guy that's right up there, and he has a good shot at winning the championship, and you're way down in the points, and you come up against him, and you're on the same race team, he's going to win that race. And I really believe that Height would have won the race anyway, because he qualified higher than Force did, and he was running really well. He was in the top half of the field, and Force has been having a few little problems here and there. But yeah, he said after the race, you know, he didn't want to hit the wall, because then people would say he's too old to drive anymore, and they try to take his license away and all this, you know. Well, you know, I've seen the other teams do it. You know, I'm reminded of Seattle in 2003 when Whit Bazemore was number two in the points. He had a shot at winning it, and Selzy had won the first round. Well, Selzy had lane choice. Well, Selzy, following team orders, he took the bad lane. And Bazemore won that round. So it's not like this was the first time anything like this has ever happened. And if I was John Force, I would have done exactly the same thing. Really have nothing against any of that, you know. Especially when you got four cars, what does they have? Three funny cars and a top fuel dragster.
Yeah.
Oh, I was happy for Terry McMillan too in the final round.
That's
you know,
right.
I'm sorry, Brittany red-lighted, but you know, when Terry won that race, man, that was cool. And we had him on the show just here a couple of months ago. Man, he's a great guy.
We sure do, and that was great. See, and the thing that's the thing, we got a whole bunch of guests that have come on, and you know, it's fantastic. So that was great. Of course, how do we miss Terry winning that race? The first guy that I saw him to congratulate him was Ron Capps, and I jumped on that Twitter and replied all and said, "Yeah, man, congrats, buddy." So good stuff. Well, go ahead.
He was in the countdown too. He's within the top 10, you know, which is a really big feather in his cap, and I know that it's gonna, you know, help boost their confidence and put them in the hunt, man. I think it's going to be great.
Absolutely, it's fantastic. And here's Barb. She just put that up there too. The great minds think alike. Tell us. Let's see. Stay with NHRA for one more thing. And so I've got the word this week that the NHRA is sticking with 16 car pro stock fields for 2018. Earlier, they had floated the idea and actually had announced that several of the races we were only do 8 car fields. And so I guess they got together with the pro stock, and they mentioned that a couple of changes might be coming to the rules. I don't know what those are. Perhaps it would be to give them another 1,000 or 2,000 RPM so the Mopars can play. But, of course, Alan Johnson announced this was his last year. So I don't know if if that was the case, I wonder if he would stick around. But, I mean, what do you think about that?
Well, you know, a guy says he's retiring, and then the rules change, and then he decides not to retire. I've seen some of them do that. They'll come out of retirement and give it another go. Because drag racing, you don't just walk away from it if you've raced that long at that level and everything. And Alan Johnson, he's a world champ. He's one of the greatest pro stock drag racers that there ever was. And I would love it if he decided to come back now that they have 16 car fields, and it's not just going to be, you know, in quotation marks, pro stock Camaro.
Right.
Hopefully they're going to have some Mopars in there. I'd love to see a Ford in the mix and, you know, mix it up a little bit and get it more diversified than what it is at this point, because all the cars that are winning are the Chevys.
Well, you know, the thing is, they simply, you know, I guess in the RPM range, and in fact, one of our guests was on there who formerly had raced a Mopar and races a Camaro now. He said, you know, he told us in advance of the season that the Mopars just don't run at that lower RPM level.
That's
You know, I think it was McGahey who told us that. But
it sure was, yeah.
But, you know, so, and that proved out. I mean, Erica, one of the finest teams out there, they, you know, they spent a year in the Mopars and didn't do well. But then, you know, that's the thing now, which is kind of the Frank Iaconio thing from back in the 80s when he joined that super team with Kenny Bernstein. I talked to him, and I talked to guys who knew him, and said, you know, he lost a year of development on the Chevy trying to flog that Ford Thunderbird, and then he was never did quite get back to where he was. I mean, if you lose a season, you can kind of see it with Erica and the Freeman team this year. It's just not quite up to the other guys. They're qualifying, you know, towards the bottom of the first 8, you know, sometimes a little bit better, but pretty interesting.
Yes, it is, and I expected the Elite Motorsports team to move on from the Mopars because of that, because there's a huge performance gap between those two. According to they got all the rules set the same for everybody, and when they lowered the RPMs, I mean, well, they didn't lower, I guess they put an RPM limit on those engines, then the Mopars weren't able, it's like Chris McGahey was telling us, you know, that the Mopars wouldn't be able to compete at that level. So hopefully, if they do change the rules and they change them in favor of other makes and brands being able to run at the same level as the Chevys do, I'd love to see a Ford in there. I'm not a Ford guy, but, you know, hey, let's have all kinds of cars racing in there, and I think it'd be terrific if they did.
Yeah, you know, I saw a really, really interesting idea somebody put up, and of course it's, you know, it's very controversial, but what somebody was saying, and I can't remember who it was, as a matter of fact, I think it was Jock Nicholson, who is a great bracket racing track owner and who is a columnist, I believe, at, it's at Drag Racing Online. He wrote a column, said, hey, when you when you kind of line them up and race them once based on your qualifying position and how much quicker you are than the other guy, you have to put like 10 pounds per hundredth or something in your car. I don't remember exactly what he said it was. Basically, when you go, you know, based on your qualifying times, what you're going to start racing with, you may have, let's say, for instance, Greg Anderson may weigh, you know, 2350, and then maybe, I don't know, someone, you know, down towards the bottom of the pack might end up bowling, or let me do this the other way around. Greg would weigh maybe 2450, and somebody, you know, who's maybe 16th qualifier would weigh 2350 on race day, and then they'd have at it. And that way it's, you know, not the, and then it becomes almost purely a driver's race, unless you have just so much horsepower. But I guess that's the thing that, what he was saying is, look, there's like 3 millionaires out there and a bunch of other guys trying to keep up with them. And it's just the cubic money is too much to overcome.
Yeah.
And of course, I can just see folks, you know, saying, well, that's exactly like, affirmative action or something. And, it's supposed to be a heads-up class. But I thought it was an interesting outside-the-box idea that was pretty interesting.
That is fascinating. I that's the first I've heard of it, and it's still sinking in what you were just talking about there, BP. But it does suggest that parity would be a good way to go with pro stock, and it comes down to driving skill and having, you know, if everybody's on a level playing field. That's the way I like it. It's that way with Top Fuel. It's that way with Funny Car. Mm-hmm. To an extent, it was that way with Pro Stock Motorcycle, but really there's some teams that are just running away with it every year, and except last year. Jerry Savoie won last year, so, you know, that was cool. The main thing that I was extremely pleased to read, and I read this on Drag Race Central. See, I was going between the Texans game and the Toyota Nationals yesterday on the internet, you know, keeping up with all of it. But don't let me lose my place and forget what I was talking about. But
you were happy to see something.
Yeah, when they said they were coming back to 16 car fields and they were going to run all 24 events, I said, "Well, good. That's the way it should be." And that keeps pro stock alive, if you ask me. If they went to 8-car fields and just ran 16 events or however many they were talking about, then it signals to everybody that that class is on the way out.
And when you think about it, there's a couple of fields where they didn't fill the fields, and I think they were probably targeting those races,
right.
You know, when you had 14 or 15 cars. But, you know, and something that Thomas Warren jumped up here on the chat, it says that, you know, weight adjustment, the sandbaggers will come out. Absolutely. The guys would be, you know, it'd be like Glidden in the Fairmont. He'd be shutting off at 1,000 feet and still beating everybody by 0.2. It would be pretty interesting to see that too. But, and Jock Nicholson actually mentioned that in his article. Certainly it would be sandbagging, but it'd be interesting.
Absolutely.
Anyway. Let's jump on something else. Now, here's nostalgia racers, which we love so much, and it's very, very recent because it has to do with something Brian Golic told us when he was on the show just, what, last week or the week before?
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying when he ran that 646 at 226 in the Super Camaro, that showed what incredible horsepower they had. They just needed to get it laid down. Well, Rocky Perrone, driving his own car this last weekend, did that indeed. He went a 617 at 231 miles an hour in the Super Camaro. Yeah, setting up the best times for that machine, and obviously making Brian Golic a very, very good fortune teller. So congrats to Rocky and those guys. That was a fabulous run.
That is great, man. I didn't hear about that, but, you know, I don't know what I've been doing. I've been on the road a lot with the band and getting all that done, so I haven't had a whole lot of time to catch up on everything. However, Danny White keeps me up to the minute whenever whenever he gets in touch. It's always something fascinating, and he's been a great chat buddy on Facebook for the last year. We've just been having a great time.
Yeah, when I get something from Danny, it means something cool has happened. But that's usually where I hear something first. He's back there plugging away on the drag list. Well, Well, we're jet setting around on the airwaves here, John.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, let's see. We got time for one more thing. And what I want to do here is send a shout out to our friends Dale Broderick and Ella McAuliffe. Dale is always up on the chat, and of course we see them at all the nostalgia events. But I want to thank them. Denise had a Halloween party at her school last week. Thursday night, I believe. It was kind of a trunk and treat where the kids go to the back of each minivan and the back of each trunk to get their treats instead of cruising around on the streets. And Dale and Ellen brought their race car down because the theme of the school year this year is like racing to excellence or something very similar to that. So it was absolutely awesome. They put the car right in front of the school.
All got right.
Cool pictures up on Facebook, and the kids absolutely loved it. And the ones who came by and really showed interest, Ellen or Dale would take them all around the car and show them everything. It was really, really great. So I want to thank Dale and Ellen for doing that. Way to support the neighborhood and way to support young kids. And there was a couple kids that were like all into it. They wanted to. One guy said, "I want to work on these when I grow up." And a couple folks said, "Of course they want to race them." But it was really cool. So thanks to Dale and Ellen for that. It was an awesome night. And if you, I've got it up on the Draglist Facebook page. You can see photos up there, folks, if you haven't been up there. So, all right, our buddies rock, John.
What's that?
I said our buddies rock.
Yes, they do. And Dale and Ellen are two of the coolest people you'd ever want to meet. That car is just absolutely gorgeous. I featured Dale as Racer of the Week. He was one of the first races of the week that I put together when I started doing it. And we're going into the sixth year now of Racer of the Week. So we have quite a long history there with these people. And Dale was one of the greatest races of the week. And, I was really honored to be there at MIR when Dale ran that personal best. He ran an 850, or I think it was either an 850 or an 830. And he won the round. And, mm-hmm. that little competition coupe with that paint job on it is just, you can't stop looking at it. You just want to jump in it and smash the throttle, So I can understand Dale and bring that thing around. That is really great that he did that. Way to go, man.
Yeah, and Dale's up on chat. He said, and of course they hopped right down to Virginia Motorsports Park for a nostalgia event a couple days later, and he said they had some really cool period correct pro stock cars down there at VMP. So speaking of which, let's talk about Kevin Pryor, who we will talk to next Monday night. Kevin Pryor will be our guest. He does have the Good Wrench Olds, Warren Johnson Oldsmobile. Is that a Firenza, I think they were that year? I can't remember.
Yes, it was.
But yeah, he'll be on. He'll be our guest tonight and our next Monday night. And by the way, we have to wrap it up. So, John, it's been a pleasure chatting with you. We don't get to do this too often anymore, although our earlier shows we did this kind of thing quite a lot.
Thanks,
it was kind of fun.
Well, we'll see about getting Ray whenever we can get hold of him, because I know he's a great guy, and there must have just been a mix-up or something. So we'll get Ray back on here next time or sometime in the future.
Absolutely. We'll get two tin cans and a string. We'll make it happen. So thanks to John and Danny and Jeff and Dustin and Barb Santucci and Bud Mr. Drag News DeBoer. And another great night, folks. Adios. We'll see you next week.
Both now and then. So get yourself situated.